Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we have for you this week.
Coming up today, I'll take a look at the outcome of the FAA audit on Boeing, while Tom updates us on the latest with Spirit and JetBlue.
Joe will share news of a huge airplane order from one US airline, while I look at why Antonov's former CEO could be heading to prison.
Finally, I'll look at why a decade-old aviation mystery could be opening up again.
Oh, well, now you know what's in store. Let's get on with the show. And Joe, I think it's your turn to go first.
It is certainly. I've got away with doing two stories for a few weeks now, but I've definitely been at work for a week. So I will start today. And I wanted to really recap what the outcome of the FAA audit of Boeing was. So this was a six-week audit, which listeners will remember was prompted by the incredible Alaska Airlines MAX 9 door plug blowout. The FAA was looking into quality control and compliance across all aspects of Boeing's business and its supplier Spirit Aerosystems. Well, the findings were announced by the FAA this week, but what they released publicly was very thin, let's say. They do represent some troubling news for Boeing and Spirit. Spirit, if you're not aware of them, is the company that makes the fuselage of the 737 MAX, so had lots of fingers pointed its way for the door plug blowout. Anyway, the FAA said that during its audit, the agency found, and I quote, multiple instances where the companies allegedly failed to comply with manufacturing quality control requirements. It also said it identified non-compliance issues across Boeing's manufacturing process control, parts handling, storage, and product control. That, I'm afraid, is about all they've told us, because no further details were made available by the FAA at this point, nor has the FAA detailed specific actions that Boeing or Spirit must take. However, the summary of the findings have been sent to the relevant parties now. And according to Reuters, Spirit said that it is in communication with Boeing and the FAA on the appropriate corrective actions. In response, Boeing said, by virtue of our quality stand downs, the FAA audit findings, and the recent expert review panel report, we now have a clear picture of what needs to be done. That's a good thing, because if you'll remember, we spoke about on last week's podcast, they've got less than 90 days, probably more like 60 or 70 now, to present their corrective action plan to the FAA. But it's interesting that Boeing mentioned that expert panel report there, because I was having a look at that, and the expert panel also noted that Boeing had suffered a loss of talent during the COVID pandemic. It also warned that reliance on dispersed engineering experience, expertise and guidance does not appear to be coordinated or consistently monitored for sufficiency in numbers, expertise, experience or communications channels. So lots of words that are basically saying that this idea of having things built by other companies and then bringing them all together to be finished off at Boeing isn't really working. And actually, Spirit Aerosystems is an interesting case in point on this thing. So that firm was actually a subsidiary of Boeing until 2005. At that time, Boeing was undertaking a broad strategy, which it envisioned itself becoming, as I kind of just described, really, an integrator of assemblies that were all built by third parties. So lots of companies all over the place making bits, sending them into Boeing, and then Boeing puts them all together and sends out a plane. But at the time that it was doing this strategy, this change of how it was doing business, one of its top engineers, a guy called John Hart Smith, he was actually working in the Phantom Works division at the time, warned quite clearly that it was a bad idea. I found an old column of his in the Seattle Times where he opined at length on why it was a bad idea. But the crux of it was he was questioning whether a company can even continue to operate if it's completely reliant on outsourcing the majority of its work. I think it's a good point. You know, is a Boeing product even Boeing if all Boeing does is bolt the bits together? Anyway, so it seems that Boeing might be looking to take this advice, be it 20 odd years old as it is, because it was confirmed late last week that it is in talks to buy back Spirit Aerosystems. Boeing reckons that by reintegrating the companies, it will strengthen aviation safety. Reading between the lines, it means they won't have missing bolts or bad shims or any other of these issues that we've heard so much about in the last few years. However, both firms have admitted that talks are very much in their infancy and there's no guarantee that an agreement will be reached. But I think it's an interesting move. And I think if Boeing wants to take control of its quality and really have everything as it used to be, bringing it back in-house makes absolute sense. Don't you think, Tom?
Yeah, no, I do think it makes sense. And I mean, it's difficult to sort of draw the line of where does supply end and manufacture begin, I think. But, you know, when you look at Airbus, they have a lot of suppliers as well. I think Spirit even supplies Airbus for something. So it's that opens a whole nother wormhole of if Spirit then belongs to Boeing, like Airbus, you know. But hey, I've entered the deep, dark ramblings now.
Well, let's move from one Spirit to another Spirit, and not the one that builds fuselages. I'll do your segue for you right now, Tom.
Good segue for this one as well.
Please, present us with yours.
I was going to say, from breaking planes to another breaking story, literally. This week, we saw JetBlue breaking ties with Spirit Airlines, officially killing the planned merger of the two. So JetBlue argues that while both airlines have remained believers of the benefits of a merger, the termination of their agreement would be the best course of action for JetBlue and Spirit Airlines. So, according to JetBlue's statement, the merger agreement in July 2022 required for the airlines to close the transaction by July 24th, 2024. Fun number. However, the required closing conditions included regulatory approval, and these are unlikely to be met by the July 24th deadline. So, you know, the breakup fee of the merger is going to be $69 million for JetBlue. And the termination of the agreement also includes the planned divestment of Spirit Airlines assets at various airports, including LaGuardia. So it's kind of a big mess to unravel this, I think, but the JetBlue really thinks that that's less of a mess than dealing with this in July when the transaction doesn't go through. So speaking about it, Joanna Geraghty, always get that one wrong, who's the new CEO of JetBlue, as I'm sure you know, Joe, was adamant in saying that the merger was worth pursuing because it would have created a low-fare, high-value competitor to the big four carriers in the US, and the big four American Airlines, Delta, Southwest, United. She said, "We're proud of the work that we did with Spirit to lay out a vision to challenge the status quo, but given the hurdles to closing that remain, we decided together that both airlines' interests are better served by moving forward independently." Now, on the subject, Ted Christie, who's the president and CEO of Spirit Airlines, reiterated that the two airlines would have struggled to meet the deadline with the regulatory hurdles. And he said that the low-cost carrier was disappointed, but Spirit Airlines has remained confident in its ability to continue as an independent airline. Now, this is interesting because when the U.S. District Court for the District of Massachusetts blocked the merger in January 2024, it reiterated that the court had found the mergers to be anti-competitive, which would have violated the country's laws to protect consumers from any anti-competitive harm. At the time, Merrick Garland, the US Attorney General, said that the court's ruling was a victory for millions of travelers across the country, as they would have faced higher fares and fewer choices if JetBlue and Spirit Airlines had merged. And she said, "The Justice Department will continue to vigorously enforce the nation's antitrust laws to protect American consumers. I want to thank the Antitrust Division for their excellent work on this case." So, what's next for JetBlue and Spirit? Well, JetBlue's primary goal is now to return to sustained profitability and drive shareholder value. Love those buzzwords. But going forward, it will refocus on its core strengths. These are going to include deepening its network, relevance in proven areas, and better segmenting its product offerings while delivering cost savings. The airline noted that it's outlined several revenue initiatives for this year, resulting in $300 million in benefits during the year. Meanwhile, shortly after the merger had first fallen through, some analysts speculated that Spirit Airlines would look for another buyer, enter into Chapter 11 bankruptcy, or even liquidate completely. Ted Christie has rejected any possibility of the low-cost carrier going into bankruptcy, and this was on an earnings call in February that he said that. But Spirit Airlines said it was confident in its strengths and aims to return to profitability too, taking prudent steps to ensure the stability of the balance sheet, retaining two advisor companies to lead the financial transformation. Personally, I think it's really interesting that JetBlue has now firmly pulled out, as in January, when we had the original notice from the US court that it was not going to go through, a notice of appeal was filed pretty much straight away. And then both airlines later sort of filed a request to fast track the process of this appeal. So I guess obviously, you know, that hasn't worked. And, you know, it's just... It seems to be really an issue of dates for these two airlines from what has been said, rather than, you know, we don't think it could ever get done, but sticky situation.
Do you think they'll still appeal the decision and try and go back on things, or is that it now?
I don't want to say. They could still appeal it and go back. I think they're making it out to be such a mess to already get out of the situation now that I think it would just make it even more messy. But, you know, we've seen stranger things in aviation before.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, JetBlue will come out of this absolutely fine. I'm sure it will be looking for more acquisitions. So no doubt it's sniffing around any other airlines that could be up for sale.
Frontier was free. Oh.
Allegiant, maybe. No, I mean, my worries are with Spirit because they've not been profitable for such a long time, and I feel like they're just really struggling and limping along at the moment, and this JetBlue deal was their saving grace, which isn't happening now. So I think they need to knuckle down and get back to profitability, but that's just my opinion. I'm not an expert. But one airline that is doing very well, clearly, is American Airlines, because they've not only set out their future fleet strategy, but they've invested in a huge order for new aircraft this week. So all in all, the US airline ordered 260 aircraft, which was kind of supplier agnostic. There were some Boeings, some Airbuses, even some Embraers in the mix. And it's the next step on this road to fleet simplification for the airline. I've got to say that word at least twice more, so let's see how I do. It's already the largest operator in the world of A320 family aircraft, and it has now announced that it has ordered an additional 85 A321neos, taking its order for the type to 219. That's kind of cemented its place as the largest customer for the A321neo in North America. It has already taken delivery of 70 A321neos since the first one was delivered back in February 2019. And this year, it's going to be introducing its new long-haul premium flagship suites, which feature privacy doors. And they'll be coming on, of course, the very exciting A321XLR and also its Boeing 787-9 new deliveries. So it did, as well as this order, it released an Investor Day presentation, which I was, of course, nerdy enough to read all 86 pages of.
Wow.
One particular graphic really stood out, which showed the A321XLR not only flying transcontinental, which was kind of, you know, that was expected, but also doing some transatlantic trips. They didn't kind of pinpoint any destinations on the map, just kind of a red blob on Europe. But, you know, I think that's going to be a great place for the XLR. Of course, JetBlue already flies the A321LR transatlantic, but with the additional range of the XLR, American could look at different airports from the US and different destinations in Europe. Anyway, that's kind of beside the point, but I did find that quite interesting. I'm very excited to see the XLR starting to deliver this year. Anyway, back to the orders. So that was the Airbus order. There was also a firm commitment to the Boeing 737 MAX program. In fact, American doubled its order book from around 70 airplanes to more than 150. So it ordered 115 of the 737-10, which is the MAX 10, if we're still allowed to say that. And that's a new order for 85, but also conversion of a previous order for 30 of the 737-8 or MAX 8. There was also purchase options for 75 additional MAX 10s in the future. And, you know, this is a huge confidence boost for Boeing. I don't need to say too much about that, but they've had some problems with the MAX family, right? And Stan Deal said, "We deeply appreciate Americans' confidence in Boeing and trust in the 737 MAX family."
So a question from me on that is, where are these MAXs coming from? Because I know recently United has said, kind of taken the MAX 10 out of its order expectations. Is there any link between those that you know of?
I don't think so. I don't think Boeing has built enough MAX 10s for it to be like whitetails that it's going to get faster.
Could be
I think
slots,
it is
though,
just,
you know.
Yeah, it's definitely slotting its place in the production queue for the future. Mm. You know, and the MAX 10 will happen. It's taking a bit longer than expected, but it will happen. Anyway, as well as its mainline fleet additions, American has added more Embraer E-jets for its regional airlines. So we've talked about it before that the airline has got a goal to phase out all of its 50-seater single-class regional jets by the end of the decade. I think it would really like it to happen a bit sooner than that, but that's kind of realistic. And the E175 is the perfect replacement. There is no E175E2. So this is the same one that's been around for a really long time, and it remains an absolute staple of the US regional market. So this week, American ordered 90 new E175s with options for another 43. These are going to be delivered in the dual class configuration with 76 passengers. And of course, they'll be operated by American's wholly owned regional carriers. So as well as securing new delivery slots for aircraft for pretty much as far as we can see into the future, the airline has also outlined plans to make things better with the fleet that it already has. So its A320 family aircraft will be getting an interior refresh starting next year. This is going to include power at every seat, larger overhead bins, new seats and an updated trim and finish. The A319 fleet will get more premium seats for a total of 12 domestic first class, while the space on the A320 for domestic first will see a bump up to 16 seats. So including today's announcement, or this week's announcement, I should say, the premium seating in the American Airlines fleet with the arrivals of the new flagship first and then the new products and the upgraded A320 family means that by 2026, there will be 20% more premium seating on American Airlines planes than there are this year. I think that's pretty cool. And it shows where all their money's coming from, really. But I wanted to do a little quiz with you, Tom.
Oh,
how
God.
Many... I talked a little bit about fleet simplification earlier. How many aircraft families do you think American Airlines flew before the pandemic?
Before the pandemic, 787, 777. Yep. Did they have any 767s?
They did.
757.
They
I
did.
Think. Yep. 737.
Yep.
A320.
Yep.
A321.
That, no, that's all one family.
Okay, we're calling that one family. A330? No, not
they
them.
Didn't have that. The ones you're missing are the E190 and, of course, the MD-80.
Yes, of course. The Mad Dog.
And how many types do you think it flies today?
Oh, God. 787, 777, yep. 757, 737, 320, E-Jet. So six.
Take the E-Jet out because that's flown by the regional airlines. Okay. So the future American Airlines fleet, they've actually taken the 767, 757, all taken out of the equation. So they're focusing on four aircraft families for the future. It will be the 777, the 787, the A320 family and the 737. And that is it.
I just find it crazy that, you know, they're still ordering the E1 when the Embraer's made this amazing aircraft that's the E2. But because of these scope clauses, which, you know, I still don't fully understand myself, but, you know, yeah. it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, the US is crying out for an E175E2 or just something that's the same as the E175, but a bit more efficient, you know, and it's just not been delivered yet. So we're going to continue to see new orders for the original E175, I think.
I don't have a good segue here. I know, it's a bit of bad news, but what is also bad news is if you happen to be the former CEO of Antonov. Our second biggest story across the whole website in 2022 was the destruction of the Antonov An-225. This was commonly known as Maria, which was is the Ukrainian word for dream. And until its destruction, it was the world's largest flying aircraft. Since then, the Security Service of Ukraine has been hard at work, and it's been conducting an investigation into the destruction of the Antonov An-225 and the wider Battle of Hostomel Airport as a whole. Now, last week, it confirmed that it had gathered indisputable evidence of the guilt of former Antonov officials, being the CEO and the head of Aviation Security Unit. Both are being charged with breaching Articles 27.2 and 114-1.2 of the CCU. Now, in layman terms, this means the obstruction of lawful activities of the AFU and other military formations. In a statement on the matter, the SSU elaborated, according to the investigation, on the eve of Russia's full-scale invasion, the suspected officials did not allow the National Guard of Ukraine to enter the territory of Hostomel Airport to prepare for its defense. To do this, in January-February 2022, they ordered to block the access of Ukrainian military to the territory of the facility. So on this basis, the Security Service of Ukraine has alleged that the criminal actions of the ex-officials led to the temporary seizure of the strategically important airfield during battles for Kiev and the destruction of the Antonov An-225 aircraft. It's thus charged them with obstructing the military activities, and the pair of them actually each face up to 15 years in prison for this, and they're both already in custody, I understand. Certain reports also suggest that the officials' actions prevented an evacuation flight that could have seen the AN-225 removed from the airfield before the invasion. You might remember that we saw quite a few of the airplanes flying to Leipzig in Germany, and it was prepared that the 225 would also go to Leipzig, but it never got the order to take off. The Kiev Independent via Yahoo News notes that the damage amounted to around $227.8 million. It was previously reported that it would take over $500 million to rebuild what's left of the giant aircraft. And in May 2022, President Zelensky pledged $800 million to this purpose. In late 2023, we saw that work had taken place to remove the damaged wings and nose from the huge aircraft. But, you know, while the aircraft was undeniably a symbol of Ukraine, it's already more than three decades old when it was destroyed. It had already actually been stored after the collapse of the Soviet Union, but was refurbished before re-entering service in 2001. I do wonder how much life, even if it does get brought back, this plane will have.
Yeah, I remember looking into where it goes and how often it flies, like back before it got destroyed. And, you know, it didn't do that much flying. It would get the odd mission here and there, you know, maybe sort of three or four or a handful of flights every 6 to 8 weeks. And the rest of the time it was just stored. I think it's a very big, very expensive aircraft to fly, very, very expensive to charter if you want to move something. And for those specific missions where you've got this enormous piece of equipment that only that plane can move, it's great. But how often does that happen? You know, most of the time the 124 will do the job just fine. So I don't know if they'll actually go ahead with it. I hope they do.
Yeah, from an AvGeek point of view, I really would.
Even if it's just to put it in a museum, you know.
I do wonder. I was flying even less than the Charter A380.
I think it was.
You know, it was a wonderful aircraft.
It was. And it's one of my big aviation regrets is that I never saw it in real life. But it's interesting you're talking about something that happened 2 years ago, because something that happened nearly 10 years ago is still very much on people's minds. Would you believe it's been 10 years since the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines flight MH370? March the 8th will actually be the anniversary, which I think will be a couple of days after this podcast comes out. And in case you forgot, it was a Boeing 777 that had 239 people on board, 12 of them crew and 227 paying passengers. This plane was flying from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing on March the 8th, 2014. And the last communications from the crew were heard around 38 minutes after takeoff while the plane was overflying the South China Sea. The aircraft disappeared from ATC radar minutes later, but was also tracked by the Malaysian military radar for about another hour. And it was this radar that showed it actually deviated westward from its planned flight path. It eventually left the range of this radar when it was around 200 nautical miles northwest of Penang in Malaysia, which is entirely the wrong direction, I have to say. My geography's not great, but even I know Penang's the wrong side. The search for the aircraft has become one of the most expensive searches in the history of aviation. So tens of millions have been spent on attempting to locate the crash site by governments. And even when there were pieces of debris washing up on beaches, the exact resting place of MH370 and its passengers is still unknown. Well, almost 10 years later, there are now calls to reopen the search. So Texas-based company called Ocean Infinity, these guys were involved in a search in 2018, and they've now floated the idea of reopening the search. They actually started making noises about this in 2022, but at the time had no kind of support from the Malaysian government. Well, now the firm claims that it's been trawling through data collected in 2018 and it's found new evidence. It's not telling us what that evidence is, but it reckons that it can find the plane, and it has proposed a new no-find, no-fee search. Malaysia actually had a remembrance event last weekend during which Transport Minister Anthony Loke vowed to do everything possible to solve this mystery once and for all. He said, meaningful changes have been made to prevent a repeat of this tragedy, but I'm also clearly aware that the task remains incomplete. He noted that he was ready to meet with Ocean Infinity and would be keen to progress a new search on a no-find, no-fee basis. Over in Australia, calls are being made for the search to be reopened as well. Peter Foley was the programme director for the Australian Transport Safety Bureau-led search, and he said the longer any search, new search was delayed, the smaller the chance that the flight data recorders would still be useful. He said he'd like to see the Australian government supporting a new effort and commented, I know there's absolutely no chance that the aircraft will ever be found unless we're looking for it. The last search was in 2018, that's 6 years ago, and I feel desperately sad for the families of the 239 people on board who still have no answers. It's an absolute tragedy. We need to go again. Well, family members of the crew and passengers of MH370 have been vocal in their support for a reopening of the search. There were several at the memorial event last weekend who were said to shout out in joy at the idea of a new search taking place. However, some of them also understood they had to be realistic about the amount governments can invest in tracking down the crash site. On the other side of the equation, relatives of Chinese passengers on board MH370 are still trying to get their compensation for the loss of their loved ones. A Beijing court began hearings back in November relating to 150 Chinese passengers who were lost on the flight. Relatives of the passengers are demanding compensation from Malaysia Airlines, from Boeing, from engine maker Rolls-Royce and from Alliance Insurance Group, as well as other parties as well. The court hasn't released full details of the case, but state media said there were around 40 relatives who were seeking between 10 and 80 million yen each, which is around $1.4 to $11.2 million in compensation. Not that I'm putting a financial amount on their grief, I absolutely understand, but I think it's crazy that people are still trying to get recompense for something that happened so long ago. Although I guess when there's no crash site and no bodies to bury, it's a lot more difficult to get kind of those end resolutions. But I don't know, I for one would be very happy to see MH370 reopened, and it just seems crazy that on a planet like ours, which isn't that big, with all the technology we have, you can still lose something as big as a 777.
I think the problem is that it's probably just in so many little pieces now. I kind of look at this and think, you know, if they're willing to do this on a no fine, no fee basis, then, you know, I reckon they're fairly certain that they'll find it, because if otherwise, you know, if they were willing to take the risk on not having a fee, why not just look for it anyway?
Well, yeah, there is that, you know, if they're that certain, go find it. But then who's going to pay them, because nobody's agreed to?
Yeah, but then if they don't find it, no one's going to pay them anyway. And they've got to pay for that. So
they must be pretty confident that they know where it is. I think it would be lovely closure for everybody involved if they could just, you know, say once and for all where it went down, and potentially recover a data recorder that gives us a bit more insight into what went on.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've got my own opinions of what happened, but I won't spill them here.
There's a new documentary on the BBC. Sorry to our listeners in other parts of the world. I don't know if you can get the BBC where you are, but there was one a while back on Netflix, which was good to start with, and then kind of went into conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory, yeah. I wrote a piece about it. I was that sort of enraged at this conspiracy theory thing.
Yeah, well, this BBC one, I mean, I've got opinions of BBC reporting that they're usually pretty good, and they're pretty much here are the facts without doing the kind of conspiracy stuff. So I'm looking forward to watching that and seeing if there's anything new to add to the story. Anyway, that's it for today's podcast. We do hope you enjoyed it, and welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.